We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Welcome back to another volume of Truly Disturbing Tales from Reddit. Today we're going to be narrating three new unsettling stories taken directly from the platform. I encourage you all to sit back, grab a snack, and enjoy these terrifying personal accounts. Now, without any further delay, let's jump right in. This one happened a few weeks back, and it all happened really fast, no more than a matter of a few seconds. Here we go. So I run a delivery company that brings lunch meals to schools, you know, the ones they feed to children. I basically start working at 3 a.m. I load my refrigerated truck with all the meals, a couple hundred a day, to deliver to a small school that doesn't have a real kitchen on site. But they heat up the meals for the kids at lunch. I have to start work this early because, of course, all the schools have to be delivered to by noon. So this particular morning, I've literally just started my delivery rounds as I was arriving at the very first school that I deliver to. It's a village next to a big road, kind of on top of a mountain. And to get to the school, you have to drive all the way up to the top of the village, going on little sinus streets. Then the school itself is a bit offset from the road. There are a few houses around, but on the very spot that I stopped my truck to make my delivery, it's just the school on one side of the road, while on the other, there's a few meters of a large grass band set in front of an empty parking lot. At this specific spot, there's absolutely no light, since the public lights are off until 5 a.m., and I'm here around 4 a.m. every morning. My only way to get some light to get to the door where I need to deliver the meals is to leave the engine of my truck running so I can light up the wall of the school with my headlights. Everything else around me is literally pitch black. So I do my delivery, come back out, shut the back doors of my truck, and then I realize that I have to take a piss. So I stop by the grass that is just against my truck to do so before hopping back in and continuing my route. As I said, it's pitch black out. I'm facing darkness, so I really can't see anything in front of me, except for the lights from the city that are probably about 10 miles away downhill. I'm chilling here while I'm peeing, looking at the sky because there's no clouds, and since there's no public lights on, I can see the stars pretty well. As I'm finishing up and lowering my head back down to my normal line of sight, with the lights of the city downhill in front of me, I see a silhouette passing in front of my truck. It happened quickly, but I thought I could see the shape of a head and shoulders passing by, no more than a few meters in front of me, off in the darkness. At this moment, I was done and closing my belt back up to get back in my truck, and I kind of instantly freaked out. Started walking right alongside my truck to get back in. To give you reference, I was behind the truck peeing, not close to the driver's door, all the while thinking to myself, "Nah, man, you didn't see a head and shoulders. You didn't see anything. Maybe just some leaves or a branch getting in your view, and you misinterpreted that." But I wasn't buying that at all. I was sure of what I saw, and I was quietly freaking out inside. But now is when I get to the worst part. Once I'm back in my truck, ready to leave, clutching in to get my truck into first gear, I take a look in my left rearview mirror as I'm starting to slowly put my truck in motion. And that's when I see it. I see a figure behind my truck, peeking around the back to check on me as I got back into my truck. This confirmed that I didn't imagine it. There was someone here at 4 a.m. in the complete darkness, pitch black, just walking here for some reason, no more than a few meters in front of me. They could clearly see me because, remember, I left the headlights on to light up the wall. So I'm watching pitch black, but they can see me clearly. The engine of my truck was running the entire time, so I didn't hear if anybody had made any noises or left any clue that they were actually there. This person actually followed me at the back of my truck. For whatever reason, this person stood at the back of my truck and continued to scope me out. I got on my way and did the rest of my deliveries that day, but I was out of sorts for the rest of my shift. It freaked me out. And if I'm being honest, it still kind of does now. I don't have to deliver to any schools for the next 2 weeks because it's spring holiday here in France. But I'm genuinely a touch scared to go back there. I might be a big dude, but I find this scary as f***. How could you even hope to defend yourself if somebody wanted to attack you in that situation? If they can clearly see you, but you can't them. About 5 years ago, when I was 16, I was dating this guy who was about a year older than me. We'll call him Mitch. My parents never let us hang out alone, but to my surprise, they let him come on a family camping trip with us. I think they allowed this because it was kind of a special occasion, since the camping season was coming to an end, and also because the site that we were going to had been kind of a tradition for us. But this season, when it closed, it would never again reopen for camping, because people had ruined it by dumping trash and trespassing on nearby properties. Anyway, so my dad, mom, Mitch, and I are all going on this camping trip. Mitch and I have our own tent. My parents have theirs. We have an amazing first day out there. We went up on a Friday morning and plan to stay through Sunday night. Mitch and I spent the day walking along paths, catching lizards, swimming, exploring, and talking about creepypastas that involve the woods. At some point, we were exploring and realized that there were nearby properties, maybe two or three cabins about 3 or 4 miles down a dirt road from our campsite. Later that evening, my parents made a big fire. We had burgers for dinner, my parents were drinking, and Mitch and I were trying to make s'mores, while all the while trying to pretend that we weren't terrified after talking about camping horror stories all day long. I'm in the middle of trying to explain the rake to my sloshed parents, and Mitch audibly gasps, because there's a guy walking down the road from the direction of the cabins. Again, it was like 4 miles off. So we all get kind of quiet. My dad calls out to the guy, something like, "Hey, how's it going?" And the guy doesn't say anything back. My dad calls out yet again, yelling out, "Are you camping? We have this spot reserved." Not in like a mean way, just trying to get the guy to respond. The guy still doesn't say anything. Not until he's about 25 feet away from our campsite, which was weird as hell because it took like 2 minutes of silent walking to get to us after we first called out to him. He comes up closer, and that's when he speaks. "Hey there, folks. I just like walking around. Sometimes I take a walk down from my cabin and see if there's anyone out here camping." So this guy sits down and talks to my parents for a while. My parents are super drunk at this point, and I think they've been smoking pot pretty much all day because they were surprisingly chill with this strange man appearing and were very friendly. They all talked about what a shame it was that the camping season was ending and how terrible it was that the campsite itself was closing. Mitch and I whispered back and forth and were talking about just how weird this guy was. How weird it was that he walked this far, didn't talk at first, and just invited himself to our campsite. Then we started to notice other things. Mitch pointed out that the guy's zipper was down. He had on some lengthy cargo shorts, but his boxers were poking out of his zipper. And then I pointed out that in this entire interaction, at this point the guy had been here maybe 10 or 15 minutes. He hadn't even acknowledged us with a single word, despite sitting right across the fire from us and continuously looking at us. Then we both started to notice how the guy was mimicking my parents. He went from being stone-cold sober to acting like he was drunk. He began slurring his words, getting a bit wobbly, laughing, and being much louder. Mitch and I were a bit on edge. We had been talking about creepy campfire stories all day, and this encounter felt like a creepy campfire tale. The guy just kept acting stranger and stranger, and there was no way to say something to my parents without him hearing. Mitch and I stood up and walked a few feet behind us, over to the cooler, and pretended to get some stuff out to make hot dogs. As soon as we had backed off a few feet, the guy switched the convo to talk about us. He asked my parents if this was a double date, and they explained that I was their kid and Mitch was my boyfriend. That's when the man asked how old we were. They told him I was 16, Mitch was 17. The man asked if we were good kids. They said yeah. Then he asked, well, where are they going to sleep tonight? I froze and looked at Mitch, who had reached out and squeezed the fuck out of my forearm in fear, and was staring at me wide-eyed. To my drunk and maybe high parents, this question didn't seem weird enough to even pause. The guy was still pretending to be drunk, and he was really playing it up at this point, nearly falling off the tote that he was sitting on. My parents explained, we got them their own tent. The guy said something like, oh, that's awful nice of you. That'll be an experience for them. I can't explain it, but the way he said that, it was just so sexual. I think this is when my parents kind of keyed into the weirdness. I looked at my mom, who looked sort of slack-jawed and uncomfortable, and was staring at me with a quizzical look. The guy just kept talking, asking them, well, I see one tent. Where's the other? My dad was still talking to him. He could barely keep his eyes open at this point. He was so out of it. My dad motioned towards my parents' tent and said that was theirs, then threw his arm back, super exaggerated, in the direction of our tent, which wasn't really that far off at all, and was like, theirs is way over there. The guy perked right up and actually stood up a bit, pointed to their tent and said, so that's yours, as my dad agreed. And their tent is in that direction? Also to which my dad agreed.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga, Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
At this point, I'm shaking my head at my mom, and she looks pretty sobered up. The guy keeps talking to my dad about the tents, and about how he can't see Mitch and I's tent from there. It must be pretty well hidden, or very far off. And then that's so nice of my parents for letting us have some alone time. Mitch and I say we're going on a walk at this point, and despite the woods being pitch black, and us being more than a fair share of creeped out, we go out walking on the trail that the guy happened to come from. We get far away enough to not hear them, and can barely see the fire. That's when we pull out our phones to see if we have any cell signal, and of course, we don't. I'm being super dramatic, and type out and send my friend a long message describing the situation, date, time, description of the guy, and that I love her. My phone gives me the message that it'll send the text when it finds service. The whole time I type, I'm reading it out loud to Mitch, and he's telling me stuff to add. We try to psych ourselves up and start walking back towards the campfire. The guy is gone. But I thought that maybe he was just off peeing, so I whisper to my mom, asking where he is. My parents are both like, he went back to his cabin a bit ago. He didn't pass you on the trail? This was a bit of a surprise to us. There was only one way in and out of our campground, so why didn't we see him? Now, in addition to being freaked out about the whole situation, we do feel a bit safer now that the guy's gone and we can actually talk to my parents. And that's when it all comes flooding out at a mile a minute, telling my parents about how he didn't pass us, about his fly being down, about him acting drunk to match them, and about how he really pressed to know where we'd be sleeping that night. My mom agreed with us and said she noticed it too, and it really freaked her out. My dad was pretty trashed, and I think in a way to agree with the rest of us, also said that he got a creepy feeling from the guy. Mitch and I stayed attached to my parents and talked about the guy and how freaked out we were for about another hour. But that's when my parents started drifting off, saying that they were ready to go to bed. Mitch and I ran to our tent, hauled ass with the whole tent, including all of our belongings inside, and slid it right up next to my parents. We couldn't sleep all night long because every crunchy leaf made us think that that guy was creeping up on us. As the sun eventually came up, we realized that we were still alive and had made it through the night. We ended up finishing our camping trip as planned and didn't see that guy again. But as far as lasting impact goes, that guy definitely left one. I think that we all, Mitch and I mostly, were on edge for the rest of the weekend, always checking over our shoulders to see if anyone else was around or walking down the paths that we were on. And that shit really plays into fear during the night, when you can't see anything in the distance, and every sound you hear may have something sinister behind it. That was our last trip to that campground, and if I remember correctly, that was our last camping trip as a family. Most people want to end things on a good note. My family had our tradition end on a rather unsettling one. It's been a little over 2 years since I worked maintenance in two really shady apartments in Birmingham, Alabama. I had made some poor choices, and my life was near rock bottom. $200 a week, and a shitty apartment. Not bad for a struggling addict, not bad for a struggling drug addict, but far from ideal for anyone. I had been working with the Neshama Apartments for about 3 months when I met Tony. He was an average height, late 30s or early 40s Native American man. He kind of came out of nowhere, but that's not uncommon in that kind of living situation. He dressed nicer than most of us in that predicament, but overall seemed like a pretty normal guy. Now, these apartments are under code at best. Their whole purpose is to get the homeless off of the street, so I was grateful for what little I had, but these units were in such terrible shape that the job of maintenance that Tony and I held was almost comical. Tony was very skilled in flooring and plumbing, and he was a pretty funny guy. Really quiet, but he'd make quips every now and then with a northern accent. Over the next 2 months, Tony and I became friends. Well, if you can call it that. We worked together, lived next door to each other, and also used together. You see, Tony was very reserved, until he did a line of coke. Then he'd start opening up. He'd start talking about an Indian mafia up north. He talked about how he was born into it. And I've got to be honest, I was high, and so was he. So I began laughing because it sounded ridiculous, and I was pretty sure that it was a joke. However, I'll never forget the look on his face and in his eyes. It was this dead stare with a slight smirk, like he was somewhere else, reliving something. And it was terrifying. I said, "Hey man, if you ever need to talk." He said, "Nah man, it's fine. Another life. Let's go get some more coke." So we call up dude and went to meet him up the hill like usual. But that's when the guy's cousin called back and said our dude got hemmed up before hanging up. Tony said, "Shit. Well, I know this other guy," and he proceeded to call him up. And as the guy rolls up, I kind of had this feeling in my stomach, the feeling that something wasn't right. Now, forgive my language, but this is how it went down. Tony had our money and was leaning into the car, and that's when I heard Tony yell, "Nah, that," and the guy tried to peel off. But Tony had a death grip on this man, dragging him through the driver's window. Tony screamed, "You trying to stiff me, bitch? Huh?" He hit this man so hard that I swear he was trying to punch through his face. He wouldn't stop, blood and flesh mixing with gravel on the road. I screamed, "Tony, stop. F*** this man, let's go." "F*** you, man. Check his pockets," Tony yelled. I said, "I've got the shit, man. Let's go, please." His face, his eyes, he just looked possessed. And with one more kick to this broken man's head, we fled off into the darkness. "What the fuck have you done, Tony? What did you do? I'm a fucking white guy, bro. And you're a native. We stick out, you idiot. They're going to fucking kill us," I shouted with tears in my eyes. "They won't do shit. I punked him out. Besides, that bitch didn't even see you. If he comes around again," he lifts his shirt up to flash a 9mm, "I'll dome him." Tony said this in a cold, matter-of-fact voice. His tone made me feel as if someone dropped icicles down my shirt. I've never met someone as terrifying as Tony in my life. The next morning, he told me a bit more, still coked out, mind you. Look, without saying too much, Tony told me that he worked in a series of Native American casinos as someone who dealt with loans and collections. If you couldn't pay up, Tony and another person like Tony would show up and handle it. He said, "Things are different on the reservations. That's what people don't get," as he calmly took a sip of his beer. Now, I'm not going to lie, I was pretty fascinated with his stories. And I mean, come on, they were just stories, right? Over the next few months, my worry that someone would come for us settled down some, and we moved on with life, fixing up apartments, doing drugs, rinse, and repeat. Until one day we were working on a sink, kind of tweaking a little bit. And up until this point, I would listen to his mafioso stories with a childlike wonder. But on this day, he told a story that kind of made me feel sick. He told me about this social security scheme that basically consisted of him and his bosses cashing social security checks of people that had, quote, cashed in their souls. He said, "We had six going until it all started falling apart. Someone tipped off." "Y'all finished yet?" the drunk tenant asked. "Yep," Tony smiled and said while cleaning up his tools. He smiled and walked out right by me, but I was still stunned from what I had just heard. If he was telling the truth, then he's a cold-hearted monster that's also on the run. And if he's lying, then he's incredibly f***ed up in the head. At around 3 a.m. that night, I found out what it was. I was woken up by the loudest bang I've ever heard. After the bang, a flood of blinding light filled the entire apartment complex, in addition to a lot of shouting from outside. "What the hell is happening?" I yelled to my roommate. I ran to the front door and opened it to an armed and armored U.S. Marshal in a sea of blue lights. "Get back inside, right now," the Marshal said sternly with a rifle pointed down, but definitely in my direction. So that's what I did. Seeing cops rush our apartment complex is nothing new, but this is the most intense I've ever seen. The next morning when I came outside, I noticed Tony's door had been smashed in. "Holy shit," I thought, while I was walking to the apartment manager's office. I asked, "What the hell happened last night?" She proceeded to tell me that Tony had been on the run for a while and had somehow fooled his way into a government-funded HUD apartment complex and job with said government-funded apartments, all with an assumed identity. She then turned to me and said with a shocked look, "Tony hurt a lot of people." Every hair on my body stood on end, and all I could get out was, "Oh." I'm not much for conspiracies, but there was nothing on the news about this arrest. I can't find anything on Google about it. Then again, it's pretty embarrassing that a state-funded homeless program let in an on-the-run fugitive and then paid him to work maintenance. Never saw anything on the news about Tony, He was never really brought up around the complex again after that. I've since gotten on my feet and left the apartment and that way of life behind. But the moral that sticks with me to this day is that you never truly know what's going on in the head of the man next to you.